When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Any idea why Matt Eberflus was pleased with attempting a 46-yard field goal instead of calling another play to try to improve the distance? Was that a fatal mistake? Why didn't the Bears do better on that play, and who is at fault?
Yes, I would say that Eberflus is at fault, and I would say that it was weird to me that he was happy with a 46-yard field goal. I know everybody can kick 50-yarders, including Cairo Santos, but I just felt like, why be satisfied with that? You know, I mean, to me, the question was whether you just run the ball or you try to play action and try to get something to the sideline. I don't know what, you know, whether you try to get, not cute. We don't want cute, but I figure, you know, if you throw the ball there, you're probably making a big mistake, because the reality is that bad things can happen when you throw the football, right? And there really aren't a lot of bad things that can happen. A fumble's about it when you run the ball, and that's not a high percentage. You don't have a fumbler carrying the ball. So I felt you could run another play there. That's all. Make it easier. And I just didn't understand the mentality and why you were pleased that you were that far from a field goal to win the game. And as far as the execution of the actual field goal, well, then you got to start sharing some blame, because you ran out of linemen, and you know you cut one. I'm not saying it was a mistake. We decided that was addition by subtraction, I believe, but you're still pretty beaten up, and it's tough to see that happen.
I'd like to go back to some older tape on field goals and see who exactly is where, but here's what I know for sure. On that particular play, the last question in this question is, who's at fault? And in my opinion, and I know we're going to disagree, you know who's at fault? Scott Daly, Matt Pryor, and Larry Borum. Two of the three of them wind up on their tush. Okay, they are completely run over. That was your interior. Those were your two guards and center on the blocked field goal. Larry Borum, Scott Daly, and Matt Pryor. Scott Daly absolutely blowing up. That's whose
fault
it is.
He's your backup long snapper.
He's the backup long snapper. But my point is, Larry Borum and Matt Pryor may have been your guards on extra point field goal, regardless. Now that Larry Borum had been back, he's been out for quite a while. But Matt Pryor and Larry Borum and Scott Daly all failed to do their job on that play. They were out physicaled by the Packers on that play. If they are more physical than the Packers on that play, we are having an entirely different discussion. We are celebrating Caleb Williams' birthday today. Okay,
it's his birthday.
Caleb. Happy birthday, Caleb.
We are celebrating that. So three guys weren't tough enough. Three guys did not put their foots where they should have. Three guys didn't get their rear ends lower than they should have been. That's whose fault it is.
It's the head coach's fault. It's the head coach's fault, because you have one job to do as a head coach, and that is put your team in the best position to win, to anticipate problems that you just described, Dustin. And I understand why you would look at it that way, because they did have a breakdown. That's why you want to remove as much doubt as possible from every play that you execute, because you have to assume you might not execute. Because
you got three backups you're talking about.
You got three backups, and that's understandable. That's why you try to win. That's why you try to run another play. That's why you have Caleb Williams, who has 70 rushing yards, maybe have a keeper around the right end or the left end or whatever end. You snap the ball, you run the ball, and you get 5 yards. Stop waving your finger at me.
Waving at me. I was making your
point. Here's
you
the problem, David.
I was pointing
Here's
at
the problem.
Him.
Let's just say they do what you had suggested and Molly suggested. And lots of people suggested.
Okay.
They were 5 yards closer.
Yeah.
If Scott Daly, Matt Pryor, and Larry Borum aren't tough enough, they get run over again and the kick's still blocked.
But
if your long snapper and your right
maybe
guard are on their ass,
you don't need the same amount of distance if you're five yards closer.
He's a low trajectory kicker.
Not maybe
no
from 40 yards.
What.
Not maybe from 38 yards.
He said he does. His approach is the same.
He's going to say that. He got his field goal blocked.
Because Scott Daly got his rear end kicked.
But Dustin, accept the fact.
Do your job better.
The coach needs to do his job better. You put your team in the best position. You don't play not to lose. You play to win the game.
You think the coach doesn't know he's got backups?
Apparently not. Right? I mean, because that's...
Let me answer this last question first. Who's at fault? Dustin's at fault.
Hello? Let's blame him.
You play to win the game.
Thank you.
You are the problem.
Could you read the breaking news?
Okay.
Right. Honestly, I've been fighting myself with this question for a long time.
I can't. This our show is appointment radio. I love our show, but I gotta tell you, I can't wait to hear Jalen Johnson try to explain. You know, getting tripped up. Okay, I mean that was not good. So, how do you explain Jalen Johnson slipping, falling on the biggest play of the game, a 60-yard completion to Christian Watson? Can you be as outspoken as Johnson has been about teammates' effort level and then fail to come through on a play so pivotal?
I think it's a fair question. I think it's a fair question because when you are somebody as outspoken and who says as much as he says, and we appreciate it and really benefit from it, having him on the score, I think you put a lot more pressure and focus on yourself. And typically he comes through. He is the Bears' best defensive player. He is an elite cornerback. The only problem with being an elite cornerback who is the team's best defensive player is that you can't have a letdown when you have such a clutch moment as he failed to come through in yesterday, because all eyes are on you. All ears are listening to what you are going to say next and what you said before. And yeah, he did call out teammates for effort levels and practice. That's what leaders do, and I get it. It makes it harder for him to face these kind of moments, I'm sure, but good for him that he faced it post-game. I watched him linger on the field longer than any other Bear. He would think he was the last guy in the locker room because he was just sitting there, kneeling on the sidelines, kind of process what had just happened. And what he saw, he has seen before. That makes it difficult to process. You follow him. You respect him. I am looking forward to what he has to say. It might be a little much to hold him that responsible for this big play because he did trip. It's hard to avoid those things. It wasn't like he was outrun or out-toughed. He tripped. He got his legs mixed up and he went down. Bottom line is nobody cares about why something happened. They care about the result. And the result was Christian Watson had a 60-yard reception and Christian Watson had himself a day against the Bears' best defensive player. And I am looking forward to hear him explain that.
I can't wait to hear him. But, you know, Jalen Johnson didn't execute. So why aren't we blaming Matt Eberflus?
Oh, you are.
Like he could have called a better defense and put Jalen in a better position. Because because I'm blaming Scott Daly for not executing his job.
You have missed the plot so badly this morning.
I am so stunned that this guy comes in here defending Flusi.
Wow. I never defended him. I said shame on Scott Daly, Matt Pryor, and Larry Borum for not doing their jobs.
You've been defending Flusi since we got here.
I think you even complimented his haircut.
He loves that haircut.
It's a good haircut.
See?
We could all use his haircut.
What are you saying, man?
To answer the question before Dustin jumps in with another defense of the coach, give him a contract, give him an extension. That's what Dustin wants this morning. Okay, here's the deal. Jalen Johnson, last I checked, is a human being. And he misstepped. He literally had a misstep. As people will do. It wasn't like he purposely fouled something up. It wasn't like he had some mental error. The guy fell down. The guy slipped and fell down. I'm sorry that happened. I'm sure he's sick about it. But unfortunately, things like that happen, even to great players, even to the best of them. And it was the timing of it was wrong. And guess what? It didn't really matter because they got back in the game and they still managed to overcome that. It wasn't the game-losing play. It was a big play, and it was a very important play, as it turned out, because the Bears followed up at the end of the game. But I think I don't think he had a failure because of an oversight, a mental error, a lack of preparation, you know, putting on the wrong gear. I think he slipped and fell. And I think that it's kind of a human error thing. And unfortunately, that's life. And anybody who has lived a life has had a moment like that. And it's an awkward, horrible thing. The fact that they can't overcome it is on others, not him.
It's a good question.
Did Caleb Williams do the special in that game? And how do you explain him leading the Bears to two late game winning drives only to wind up losing both times? Did he sound too happy in the post game? Who do you blame for that happening? And are you at least relieved by his performance on Sunday?
Yes, I'm relieved by his performance on Sunday. I thought he played well. It was good to see him confident. I was a little bit taken aback by the Jay Glazer report that he had apologized after they fired the offensive coordinator. That's not on him. He's not the guy. He didn't go to the coaches and tell him, hey, you got to get rid of this guy. I just think that was a pity that he felt bad enough about it, that he hadn't played well enough, that he felt he had to stand in front of his teammates and apologize that they had to fire the coordinator. I'd like to know how they hired the coordinator, and did they see that one coming at all. I did think he sounded a little happy. I think he had a good game. I think it was probably a relief for him to have played as well as he did. The tone was a little too celebratory, but that's he gets that from his coach, whose tone was wrong too, given what occurred. I don't know. I thought he played a hell of a game. I thought he did do the special. I thought converting on third down, on fourth down, you know, it was worrisome when they, what was it, third and 20 or whatever?
Third and 19.
Third and 19 when he hit that 18-yard pass, whatever. That was great. And then the fourth down pass was even better. That's just great stuff. And he deserved to win. He deserved to win that game. He did do the special. He's done it twice. It goes back to the game-winning drives and losing both times. I'm sadly, that is on really kind of, I would say, conservative play calling in both cases.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you prefer the word gutless in both cases.
I hated how he sounded after the game. I felt much worse and sound much more upset this morning than he did. I'm thrilled that he finally believes to use his legs more. Use your athleticism. Use your youth. You know, play's not there, go. Play's not there, go. Play's not there, go. And he did that, especially in the first half. So good for him.
On the field, he showed us what special looks like again, or reminded us it had been too long, a couple weeks, that you saw that you started to worry. I don't think you worry now. I think he moved with his feet. He ran the ball effectively. He also showed some arm talent. He missed some throws still, but backed up against the wall, third and 19, he had two special completions to Roma Dunze and then another one to Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
Three straight completions on that drive to put the Bears in that situation. He was on the verge of staking claim to this rivalry, to this series, and beginning a streak that you don't know what could have happened next. His first game against the Packers, and he does that? You know how it is in Chicago. You beat the Packers, and you are respected in a way that other victories don't create that kind of reaction or respect. So, yes, he did everything he could for the second time now, and both losses were walk-off losses. Now, post-game, I was a little bit surprised. I was sitting there in the second row, and it did strike me that he was in a very acceptable frame of mind. He was more upbeat than I expected him to be. And I think I might have chalked it up to just him having a good game and feeling a little bit more of a relief that he did. But whether it was Matt Eberflus before him or Caleb Williams after him, I keep waiting for a Bears player, coach, representative, general manager, owner, chairman, president, to sound pissed off about losing the way they're losing, because I have not really seen it yet.
I mean, we got our ass kicked. If I knew, it wouldn't have happened. That's a BS question, man.
How damning was Matt LaFleur's post-game comment about how assistant head coach and special teams coordinator Rich Bisaccia called the blocked field goal on the night before the game?
Rich said to our team last night, "I will not understand if we come out of this game without a block, whether field goal or PAT."
If the Packers...
So, great job by our special teams coaches.
If the Packers and their excellent special team coordinator know that Cairo Santos has a low trajectory, how come they don't know that? Is that one of the reasons they're now 11-0 in the rivalry, the longest run in any current NFL series and the longest in this rivalry's history?
That's a great little nugget there. I didn't realize those things are true. I think there's a lot more reasons than Rich Bisaccia that's true, but I got to be honest here. I think when I heard that from Matt LaFleur about Bisaccia telling his team that, I was like, okay, great. He's a great special teams coordinator. How many times do coaches tell their players and their team something's going to happen and actually doesn't? And when it does, they're covered because, like, I told you it was going to happen. Coaches do that all the time. It's like guy going up and he hits a home run. He says, yeah, he told me he was going to go deep on this one. How many times do you say I'm going to hit a home run and you strike out? How many times do you say you're going to block a kick and you don't? I get it. They win. They can have all of these stories and make tremendous post-game theater. I don't know, though, if Rich Bisaccia knew something the Bears didn't. I just think the Bears...
Look like it.
Well, low trajectory. You're going to be... He was a low trajectory on a 53-yarder, too. The thing about it is, if the Bears did know what Rich Bisaccia knew, they should have put themselves in a better situation to try to avoid that. But that's not exactly genius on Bisaccia's part. That's him telling his team they're going to block one to kind of build up their belief that they actually can, because it's a rare play in football. But if you keep telling the team that you're going to do it often enough, maybe they will come through for you like the Packers did for him.
Well, maybe not only do the Bears need to move on from a head coach, and I'm all for that, by the way, even though it's been described that I'm not, maybe they need to change the kicker as well. Because if he's this low trajectory guy and you have to kick every field goal from inside the 30.
You're dumping then, Santos?
Then, well, I'm just saying. I mean, so again, what is the Mullion Haw safe zone? Like how so no more 50 yard attempts then, because he's a low trajectory
kicker.
Can we
get a sponsor for that? The Mullion Haw safe zone?
Sure.
All right. I think probably.
Safe Light Repair, right. Safe Light Replace, right?
We'll
isn't that
try.
That window, windshield
we'll
company?
We'll work on that. We'll get the Flag and Anthem might be interested as well. So you want to know what is our safe zone?
When is okay. It okay? How close does the offense need to get in order to convert the low trajectory kicks of Cairo Santos?
As close as they can. You don't stop playing with 30-something seconds.
That's an excellent answer. It's an excellent answer. It doesn't have to be specific.
Yeah.
It's just vaguely get close as you can.
That's it. Simple as that.
Sponsor that one, Dustin.
That quote was, if you didn't feel bad
damning.
Enough, like with the loss, when you heard that quote,
yes.
If you got the opportunity to listen to the quote, Olin Krutz, and I'm sure he will say this to you guys at 7 o'clock, was so mad.
Oh, he nearly snapped. He was
going to
swear.
He said, I don't want to, he's like, I'm going to swear. And Lawrence gave him like the, okay, like, take a breath. I mean, he was so mad after hearing that cut. That he was ready to put the helmet back
but
on.
But here's the thing. You don't say that unless the guy did stand up and say that.
Oh, for sure.
And Dustin, the fact that the guy got up there and said that, David, is motivating his team to do it. If they find themselves in that spot and the guy has told them, you're going to do it, I know you're going to do it.
I love the motivation
before
part.
Before the fact, that's going to help them do it. I got to tell you.
Well, but no, the motivation part is definitely – key.
Yes.
But don't you think he's probably said that before?
Well, I don't know if he said it before, but I know he said it the night before the game where they blocked the game-winning field goal. And that frosts me because it means they saw something and knew something. And all the players, earlier in their moments, before that was said at the podium, they said that they thought for sure the Bears were going to run another play because the closer you are, the less likely you are to be able to block the kick. So, I mean, holy cow. It was a disastrous comment for him to have made. And I don't think LaFleur was making it up. But, man, you know, here's the thing. The Bears converted 9 of 16 third down attempts. That's 56.3%. And they still managed to lose that game. So I can't get past that idea that I don't know that they've converted like that all year long, and I don't know that they can convert any better. They were 3 of 3 on fourth down too, by the way. That is a lot of first down conversions, especially in some of the down and distance stuff. It just has to make you sick that they converted at that ratio, managed 19 points, and lost the game. I'm sorry. And you know, to me, this little thing that the guy said about the kicker and that you guys are going to block one and all that, it's just attention to detail. It's attention to detail that the Bears don't have. That when you add it all up at the end, there are these little moments where they lack the attention to detail you need, like playing defense on the play before the fail Mary, like trying to run the football instead of stopping play after you convert your after you get the ball to a 46-yard field goal. That's as far as we're going. You know, we converted the third down. We'll run the ball 2 yards. You know, that's all we need. Crazy to me. Just crazy.
These are the questions I cannot answer, right?
Oh, there'll be plenty of answers from Olin at 7 o'clock this morning. What's your reaction to the news that Lonzo Ball will miss more time due to his wrist injury, and how does this affect the Bulls season?
I heard he was coming back, and I was skeptical. He was supposed to come back in time for maybe the Cleveland game. And by the way, the Bears played Cleveland well right up till getting blown out with about, I don't know, like 2 minutes left. And right up to the point where they've now given up 140-plus points, 2 games running. Holy cow. They got to get a handle on that one. But, I look at the Bulls and I look at Lonzo and I think he helps them a little bit, but I don't think their season is dependent upon him. I think their season is more dependent on Zach LaVine and what is going to happen with him than it is Lonzo and whether he can finish out the year.
Would you rush back from an injury to join a team that allowed 287 combined points and losses on Friday and Sunday night, led by Max LaVine's 23 points combined in those two losses? I wouldn't.
He's concerned.
It always makes me chuckle when Dustin continues that bit.
Yeah.
Eight whole points, David.
Kobe White eight called out Friday the Bulls night. For blah, 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 blah. Kobe White called the Bulls out for playing defense and playing no defense 2 nights in a row, yep. 2 games in a row. Good for him, because that was as unacceptable as he said it was. That, to me, was troubling. The Lonzo Ball news is disappointing. I don't know, as we have said before, with guys who are always on the verge of a return but never quite contribute, can you really miss what you'd never had? And we saw glimpses of Lonzo Ball this year. He's very good to have on the court for a lot of the various reasons. But if you can't stay on the court, it's just a tease. And now I feel teased. So Bulls, bad weekend. Close game, again, on those awful, gaudy court in Cleveland. It was a close game in the NBA Cup. Very entertaining basketball. Really was.
That floor was an eyesore.
Eyesore! Holy I wanted cow. To look away, like it during commercial, awful. Like, oh, God, thank you.
I know. It was awful.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Bigs time, 9 a.m. Set yourself in a reminder. And what's your take on Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight and the horrible broadcast issues that 60 million people had to deal with while watching? Did you feel scammed if you did tune in?
I felt vindicated that I didn't. I felt rewarded for my indifference. I followed just because I am on a show that is obsessed with boxing, and I wanted to, for pop culture reasons, know what happened.
Thank you. 60 million people.
But I was extremely pleased that I didn't waste one moment watching or trying to watch buffering, while Netflix botched this whole thing. And Jake Paul, did he win? Did he not win? The controversy? I don't know. I saw a Mike Tyson clip on social media, and I had to look away fast because I did not want to see a man's bare bottom. And that's all I remember about this experience, unfortunately.
So the baddest man on the planet is no longer the baddest man on the planet. He landed 18 punches. He landed 18 punches. If I had bought, if I had subscribed newly to Netflix,
right, for the fight,
then I would feel scammed. I would absolutely, positively feel scammed. I was disappointed, especially after seeing my York Dukes advance to the Final Four, the state playoffs. Good luck to them.
That's
Saturday
awesome.
Night against Naperville Central. I was hoping to see, Joe Fortenbaugh told us over 5.5 rounds.
Joe did well.
And it was over 5.5 rounds, right? So good on that if you invested. I did. I immediately went to my app and put a couple of dollars on that since Illinois let us bet on that fight. I guess I now know why 7 states or 9 states decide you couldn't bet on that fight. But if you signed up for Netflix to see the fight, then I get why you felt scammed. I don't feel scammed.
No,
I was watching it, but I was also enjoying myself. I didn't set my night aside only for that. So
I had a lot more fun with it than I thought I would. And frankly, was it a featherweight fight? It was like 2 fights earlier. That was a really good fight. And the two women, this Irish woman and a Puerto Rican woman, they fought right before that fight. What a bloodbath. My God, this Puerto Rican woman had a cut over her eye. I couldn't believe they let the fight continue. It was one of the worst cuts I've ever seen in all my time watching boxing, where they did not stop the fight and go to the cards. It was incredible. I mean, she could not see out of that eye. And the result was incredible, too. The Irish girl, they gave her the decision, which was shocking, frankly. But she was lovely. Afterwards, she's got this beautiful, like, lilting voice. And she's like, oh, I wouldn't have cheated, and I wouldn't try to headbutt her. And like, she's got blood dripping down her face. It was like, it was one of the most, it was just so incongruous, right? Listening to her speak in that way. And then the blood's pouring down her, and the other girl looks like she's going to need like years of surgery. But as far as this fight was concerned, my God, here's what I was thinking when I was having buffering problems from the minute that I started watching it. And I started watching it a good hour and 10 minutes before the thing started. And I have, my brothers were on, we were all on a text stream. We're all making jokes. It was so much fun. They said that Jake Paul's outfit, like the whole outfit he was wearing, including his shorts that he wore in the fight, were diamond encrusted, and they cost $1 million. And after the first round started, and the guy was on his horse trying to stay away from Mike Tyson for all he was worth, and my brother said, I think he just soiled his $1 million shorts, which I thought was hysterical. So we had a lot of laughs as we were watching it. But they're running a doubleheader on Christmas Day. NFL, 2 games. They better figure out their streaming issue. And I know they had 60 million people, but won't they have that many people on Christmas Day if the NFL is playing? I'm not kidding. I think they need to figure that out and sort that out. The fight itself was a total sham, and it was sad. After the first round, Tyson just had no legs. He just looked. He looked like he could. When he threw a punch, he looked like he lost his balance and was going to fall down. It was scary. The walk to the ring nearly killed him, let alone the fight. So that was ugly. And I don't know, did you see Saturday Night Live? They had Trump and Biden talking. He asked him, what are you doing next? And he said he was fighting
This is Biden said he was fighting Jake Paul. So I think there were a lot of jokes like that making the circuit about, you know, he had challenged Clint Eastwood to a fight and all this stuff. Pretty funny. He doesn't fight like guys less than 58, apparently.